and they had laser like sensors everywhere. So we tripped it. We didn't know we were gonna like set off the alarm, and that whole entire base, I mean, it sounded like someone was about to like drop a bomb on us. Like, I'm getting beat up in school, right? Not by kids. I'm okay with, you know, kids beating me up because we fight. That's okay. But the teachers are hitting the kids, you know? So I was the class president at the time, and the class wouldn't quiet. So they, you know, the teacher had me go up in front of the class and I said, "You guys don't quiet, you know, your class president's gonna get
Whoa,
it."
she
And of course,
yeah. So
yeah,
they made
and of
you
course, what do you think kids gonna do? Quiet? No. They held my visa at a police station and we had to go get it. My mom had to beg the police officer, like I need to like go. When we look at North Korea as a South Koreans, we don't just look at them as an entity. That's your family, right? So we have this huge division.
Hello and welcome. You are listening to People I Met on the Internet, the podcast which is about mostly people I met online. Interesting people, people who fascinated me, people who I've just wanted to really, really talk to more, and whose conversations I want to share with you. I'm your host, Stephen J. Reed. I'm a filmmaker, I have a YouTube channel, and throughout my work, I just have had a chance to meet such a wide variety of interesting people, people I want to have conversations with and share. And today, I'm talking to Sei Park, who is a commercial filmmaker and a full-time YouTuber who currently lives in Washington, D.C. in the United States, but whose journey started many, many thousands of miles away in Seoul in South Korea, where he grew up during the 1980s with that constant threat from the north, just a few miles away from North Korea. As a child, he was involved in interesting things, including breaking into a U.S. military base. So we'll hear about that. We'll hear about what exactly caused him to move to the United States at the age of 13 years old. We'll hear about how his teacher used to beat him up in his school in Korea. We'll talk a little bit about Korean food, things that he misses. We'll talk about his initial impressions with the United States, what it was like moving to a foreign country as someone who didn't speak a word of the language, and what his career path has been since then. We ramble on a little bit in the middle about YouTube and our own experiences there in dealing with that platform. And at the end, we come back to that topic of North Korea. But yeah, I've just found this to be such a fascinating conversation from my perspective. So I'd urge you, even if there are bits that, you know, I'm not interested in YouTube or I'm not interested in that, just, you know, hang on, relax, grab a cup of tea, enjoy the conversation. Yeah, I'm going to talk less and let's just start talking to Sei. Right, I've now hit record. So let's try on the count of three, we'll just clap. And that'll just help me a little bit. So one, two, three. Yeah, you were right.
We both clipped.
That was
nice. You know, it's funny because I listened to your podcast. I did my homework, Stephen. I listened to your podcast before this. The one that you guys couldn't decide. It's 1, 2, 3 clap or 1, 2 clap. Or
I think it changed it every single time.
Yeah, and I listened to Tommy Hughes for a little bit since that was your latest one. Yeah, that's a pretty big shoes to fill. Why you gotta have me after Tommy, man?
Well, completely different topic. You know,
it's Tommy Hughes. I don't have any world records.
not yet. Maybe you'll have the world record for, I don't know, most gimbal videos on YouTube.
Actually, you know what? I do have a pretty unique one coming up.
Okay.
So I haven't seen anyone do something like this. So it's my mathematical gimbal testing, which I don't know. I think I have a little small niche on that thing.
Okay.
So that's something in the world.
Yeah. Right. Well, I'm going to get you to introduce yourself in a minute, but I want to, you know, get straight into the clickbait topic because we were chatting on Instagram and you said something which was like, that sounds like an amazing title for a podcast. I may or may not use it for the title of the podcast, but tell me about the time that Kim Jong-il sent you balloons.
Oh my goodness. So a little bit of context, I guess. Yeah. So I went to an elementary school that was in the mountains.
Okay.
And it's a city named Seoul. And you know, you guys know Seoul.
In Korea.
It's not that far from. We put the capital pretty close to North Korea, and because of that, people would send us balloon messages. You know, and I guess that's about the far as they can go with the balloon if you are the weather's correct and the wind's correct. So you know, I mean, like school finishes and we have to walk home. Like we don't have school buses.
Yeah.
Right, so I walked about 2.5 hours from school, and we will have to like climb some mountains to get to home and stuff. And
2.5 hours.
You would see these balloons. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it should have taken maybe like 1.5 hours, but you know how kids, like we play around a little bit, including, you know, looking up the sky, and we would see these balloons fly. And most of them, you know, popped around our school zone. So they'll hit certain atmosphere, I guess, and then it'll pop, or just kind of like someone would just kind of like drift down a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, being kids, we'll always check it out. And yeah, a lot of them had post like little tiny message posters. And it would say something like, it'll have our leader, president at the time.
Yeah.
Like some of them are graphic too. Like some of them like will decapitate the president. Some of them more have like, you know, they're a lot of like comics.
So they weren't like, trying to win you over. It was quite aggressive.
No, some of them were just like ridiculous to a point where like, oh yeah, I do not want to live in North Korea. And some of them were just slightly offensive. Some of them were just funny. I mean, as a kid, I never really understood what it meant, have any political sense to know like what the message was trying to say. All I knew was that's kind of cool. they would send us message, you know, secretly almost. You can't stop them. I mean, you can shoot them down, I guess. So we would get these things. And it was also kind of ironic because my school was next to a United States military base school. So obviously U.S. had a pretty strong presence in the military. And I guess their kids had to go to school. So they actually had a base next to our school, which was all fenced in.
Yeah.
And they're probably getting these posters too. So we're all getting mixed up, and you know, and I got in trouble too because it's a pretty heavily like it's a probably a 15 to 20 feet fence. It wasn't electrocuted like fence.
You climbed into the base?
We did. So a bunch of us climbed in, and we never seen a school that nice before, you know?
Yeah.
And we were so amazed, like, wow, this is a school. They had a basketball court. And it's not concrete floor, it's actually wood. And they had laser like sensors everywhere. Mm-hmm. So we tripped it. We didn't know we were gonna like set up the alarm, and that whole entire base, I mean, it sounded like someone was about to like drop a bomb on us, like
What age were you when you were doing this?
Yeah, so we had like, you know, military guys in Jeeps show up and like and pull us out of the base with our ears, like they like dragged us by the ears. So that's kind of like my childhood memory.
What age were you?
So I would. This is between like fourth grade and sixth grade. So right around the age where I got in a lot of trouble. But yeah, that's like my childhood.
Yeah, I mean, we had the Beano for, you know, as a comic. No one sent us our comics and balloons threatening us. Yeah,
I know. It's a free subscription, man. It just drops from the sky.
Yeah, that's crazy. So what was your childhood like then? So you said you were in Seoul, but it must be a massive city if your school is miles outside it. Why was that?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Seoul's not that big.
Okay.
And I'd say I lived in Seoul, but I was on the edge.
Right. Okay.
So if you're on the edge of the city, you're not like in the skyscrapers, you're kind of in this poor, like ruler side. I mean, like our school didn't have proper bathroom. Our school had one of those things you see in movies, you know, it's just a big hole. And that's where you go to do your business.
Yeah. We had scratchy toilet paper, but you know, that was about it.
Oh, well, toilet paper is like, bring your own. Like they don't even have it. Sometimes you use your notebook because you forgot. And you know, and one of the kid actually fell in. We called him poop face the rest of the year. So it's kind of like that. And I already forgot your question. What was your question?
What was my question? I was trying to figure out if you were living in a city, why the school was so far away. But you've answered it because you're not actually in the city. You were on sort of the suburbs.
Yeah. So And my mom tried to move me closer into the city in terms of school. We would try to like fake our address, right? You know, use our aunt's address. And the principal of the school threatened me and said, hey, if I ever find out you don't actually live here, like we're gonna kick you out. There's a lot of that.
Yeah.
Like everyone's trying to like go to the best school possible because the population in Seoul, not only the Seoul, just the whole entire country is just too high. So job availability is really short, meaning everyone's so competitive going to school so they can get the best grade, you know, graduate from the best college, and you may have a chance getting a job, you know.
So
that's the culture.
So you were growing up, what was that, 80s, 90s?
So I'm basically, I was born in 83.
Hey, you're older than me.
So, you
look
never tell
you look
Asian
younger
people.
Than me. I'm upset now.
they have that phrase, Asian don't raisin. Till they get to 55 and then they turn into Mr. Miyagi. So I'll age really fast.
Save it all up for one go.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, I would say I'm kind of split. In Korea, I was the 80s kid. Mm-hmm. But in the United States, I'm the 90s kid because I moved here when I was 13 years old.
Yeah.
So 1995, I moved here. So I enjoyed the 90s in the United States, what was left of the 90s.
So a lot of watching a lot of The Simpsons and Friends.
I actually watch, there's a show called Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have
Will
that.
Smith.
I watch that on rerun every single day. That's where I learn my English.
Brilliant.
So if I speak a little bit of that lingo, that's probably because I watched that for years, and that's the only way to learn it. You like watch TV.
Do you know the entire intro off by heart?
Entire what?
The entire intro song.
Oh, I don't know if because here's the thing, when I watched it, I didn't speak a single word of English.
Okay.
So they were just going like I have no idea what they're saying. So for that reason, I don't recite it.
Yeah.
But you know it by heart.
So you know the sounds and the rhythms of it, but not actually what the words are. That's quite.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. I mean, if I watched it more recently, I probably could recite it. But yeah, at the time, like first 3 years I watched it, I didn't really know English. It was rough.
let's go back there because that's like the crazy part. You moved to the States on your own when you were 13. How on earth did that happen? And who was responsible for allowing you to do that?
So this happens a lot in Korea. So, you know, you'll notice that there's a lot of Koreans in the United States and they're usually from around the 90s as a kind of mass exodus.
Yeah.
Knowing that, hey, there's this baby boom and we're not going to get a job. The education kind of in their perspective sucks. Let's leave the country to have a better life.
So was that more economically driven than because the outside perception is that the primary reason you might leave is because there are nuclear weapons appearing across the border?
As a kid, I don't think I ever thought of that. But if you think about it logically, Stephen, if North Korea bombs bombs Seoul, for example, they're kind of shooting their own foot
because they want
it. If the wind changes, the fallout is on them.
That is a good point.
It's a tiny country. Yeah. It's a very small country. So I don't think we're ever afraid of nuclear attack just because they'll be nuking themselves.
Yeah.
But it was more. The fear was that it was on our own, like our own country was just so overpopulated. But as a kid, I didn't really think of that. All I knew at the time was that I'm getting beat up in school, right? Not by kids. I'm okay with, you know, kids beating me up because we fight. That's okay in Korea. Like, they don't really say that's, like, you can't fight.
Yeah.
Like, they let you fight. But the teachers are hitting the kids, you know?
Okay.
So I was the class president at the time, and the class wouldn't quiet. So the teacher had me go up in front of the class, and I said, "You guys don't quiet, you know, your class president's gonna get
whoa,
it."
Whoa, so
and of course,
yeah. So they made, yeah, they made
and
you,
of course, they, yeah. yeah. What do you think kids gonna do? Quiet? No. So I got a pretty bad beatdown, and that wasn't like the only time.
Yeah.
It was a lot of just beating from the teachers to kids. That and at the same time I watched Top Gun for the first time, and you know, Tom Cruise wearing no helmet and riding a motorcycle looked pretty awesome to me. there was a lot of cultural shift where United States seemed like an awesome place to go.
Yeah.
And for some reason as a kid I had that engraved in my head, and it was when I was 13, that wasn't the first time I attempted to come here by myself. So when I was, I think I was 10. I already tried it. So I told my mom, I was like, hey, I want to live in the United States. So I tried it when I was 10, but I missed my mom and my mom missed me too much. We kind of say, hey, this, I can't do this. So I came back. And when I was 13, I was so sure at the time, yeah. You know, as a teenager, I was like, I'm going to do this, mom. And my mom wanted it too.
Yeah.
So, and it was expensive because, you know, you have to kind of like, I don't know the logistics of it, but my mom had to pay money to get visa.
Yeah.
I think it was still legal, but at the same time, I think you had to like kind of cut the line because there's so many people applying for it. So
Grease the wheels a bit.
Yeah. So I got my visa, but my mom had to like sell a lot of our stuff, I remember, to give me that visa. And then I think there was some kind of a scandal at the time, people like just leaving the country. So they cut off people. Like, so they held my visa at a police station and we had to go get it. My mom had to beg the police officer, like I need to like go. And it was like day before my flight, I remember. I don't have a fresh memory of all this because it just kind of happened all fast. But yeah, I remember going to a police station. We had to beg for our visa, get it back, and then hop on a plane. And then I came here.
Wow. I assume you had relatives there. Are you literally on your own?
So I had my aunt who lived in the DC area, but I didn't live with my aunt. So I went to someone my aunt knew, because you can't just go to anywhere in any school.
Yeah.
You have to go to a certain school that they assign you and stuff. So even though my relatives are here, I didn't live with my relative till way later.
Yeah.
So I had to live with this other Korean people I'd never met. They owned a liquor store. So it worked out for them because they would not come home till like 1 a.m., right? Because liquor stores close really late. They needed someone to kind of watch their house during the day. So, you know, I'm perfect. You know, I'm 13 years old, don't have any friends, not gonna party, you know, watch TV all day. Perfect. I stay at that house.
So when you arrived, you didn't speak a word of English.
Yeah, I knew a couple, right? Like I knew hi, car, bus, hamburger, that's important. But other than that, no, I mean, like everything that I learned in Korea was just like just a couple words here and there.
Yeah.
And you know, like culturally, slangs are very important when you're a teenager.
Yeah. So you learn all, you know, the all the bad words.
Oh, yeah. I had the bad words down. You know, people would say "what's up." Like, that's never been talked about in Korea. I don't know. People didn't just. No one taught me what's up. So when I first heard that, that was like the weirdest thing. Like, what's up? Like, what do you mean? So it was a huge learning curve as a teenager. But luckily, I thank God, like I had the opportunity to be bullied. Like people could have bullied me.
Yeah.
Right. But something saved me from that is my first week I was in school, some big kid tried to like mess with me.
Yeah.
Right. And I was black belt in Aikido at the time. and they never seen a lot of Asian people in this school.
Yeah.
So it was out in the country. Like it
you
was,
were a
I was
bit
like,
of a, probably, bit of a novelty.
Yeah. I was like, the only other Asian kid, there's one more Asian kid, his last name was like McAvoy, so clearly he was adapted. so this kid bothered me, and I don't remember for what, and I just like roundhouse kicked him.
That was the end of that, was it?
He didn't get hurt. He just kind of like was shocked by it, and it was a pretty cool kick, I have to admit. And everybody, it was like during lunch recess, and everybody saw it. And it's amazing how he became my best friend and no one would mess with me the rest of the year. So because of that, I think, you know, I had this chance. I could have gotten made fun of because I don't speak English, but somehow I was this karate kid at the school that was hanging out with this one bully. So it worked out really well.
It's like a really sort of odd supervillain sidekick setup.
Yeah. We could have. We should have been superheroes. We would have made a good sidekick. Yeah, we were like the oddest friends, you know? This tiny Asian kid and one big bully.
Yeah, you're so far you're paralleling Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, you know, in South Korea, born and raised on the US base where you spent most of your days.
Yeah, and my mom was afraid I was going to get in trouble, so she sent me to
your auntie.
No, I was a good kid in Korea. I was a very good kid. In fact, I think I've been pretty low-key good kid almost all my life, I think. I've been fortunate. I just never had a chance to, I don't know, do bad things because it just wasn't around me.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Apart from that one time you broke into, a military base.
Oh yeah, that one.
That makes up for lots of other things, I think.
I mean, come on, they asked for it. You know, they put a school next to another school with a fence on
exactly.
it. How do you ask the kids not to climb that?
Yeah, you're gonna go over it, or you're gonna go under it.
Yeah.
So, let's see. We'll jump maybe a little bit ahead, because otherwise we will be here for hours. I don't know how much time you have.
No, it's only 10:25 here.
All right, so you've literally got all day.
Yeah, I mean, well, the only thing I got to do today is just record one YouTube video, and that's it.
I've got one to edit and get out before 9 p.m. this evening, so as long as we're finished by like 5. here's something I'm curious about. So how long did it take you to go from, to be, basically be completely fluent?
Ooh, so in my head, I was fluent after 1 year.
Yeah.
Actually, maybe three. So what I didn't realize, so I married my high school sweetheart, right? So freshman in high school, I asked this girl out.
Yeah.
And I thought I spoke pretty good English. So it wasn't until like after I got married, my wife was actually telling me, I have to tell you, your English was really bad.
How long did that take? Was it like 3 years married and eventually?
I think the regular rule is that if you're a kid, it takes about just a couple years for you to actually catch up. But by the time I met my wife, it was around the third year I was there. And I guess I couldn't lose my accent in the third year, so I still had a pretty heavy accent. I kind of prided myself in trying to lose the accent because I would practice a lot, right? Because that's something as a kid, you don't want to be different than other kids.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's kind of like a human nature. So I wanted to be like other kids who spoke clear English. So I would practice a lot trying to lose the accent. So I thought I was perfect by freshman in high school. But my wife told me after we got married that I had a pretty heavy accent and she couldn't understand half the things I said.
Well, hopefully she understood the proposal and that just wasn't like a really bad misunderstanding.
Oh, she proposed to me, okay. So that was another different thing.
Well, that solved that issue.
Yeah, but yeah, I think it took me about 3 years to feel comfortable speaking, and then probably total 6 years, just so that I can, I still struggle quite a bit. So when I'm recording YouTube videos, people see the finished product. You know, I still mess up a lot because, you know, it's not that I'm like thinking about Korean language in my head, but it, you know, there's like certain phrases in English. It's like, oh shoot, I kind of like lost that. I know what's in Korean, but what is it in English? Like it still gets me here and there.
Is that like things that are more expressions rather than just sort of normal language, or have you got any examples?
Right,
this stuff fascinates me.
Yeah, just like I said, like, you know, I can't fill Tommy Hugh's shoes, you know?
Yep.
But I might blank on that phrase because I'm thinking about the Korean phrase of that. Or like certain words that are really hard, it's in my head, but I can't split it out right away.
What would the Korean equivalent be of filling someone's shoes?
That's the thing. That's the sad part, Steven. So I'm in a place where, and it's such an awkward transition.
Yeah.
So when you speak two different languages, I don't know if it happens to you, there is a phase where you kind of are not best at both worlds. You're kind of in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're not great at speaking English. You're not great at speaking Korean. You're just kind of in the middle. So I feel like that's where I am a lot of times. I don't remember on both phrases. I'm like, I you know what? I'm just going to have to re-record a bunch of YouTube videos. And I probably do like several takes sometimes to make one YouTube video. Whereas in most people on YouTube, I think, probably nail it in one takes.
Yeah.
No. You make it look easy.
That's because I cut out all the... There's a lot of blah, 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 in the videos. Yeah, I mean, we barely speak English in Northern Ireland. We have a dialect nearly all of our own. compared to the rest, we sound completely different from, you know, anybody sort of south of the border. It's so, yeah.
But it seems so natural to you guys, though. Like, most, I would say, I don't know. When you think of Korea, people try to speak English, but it's so different. Like they struggle with that language. Mm-hmm. Whereas in, I feel like Northern Ireland, I don't know, it's maybe because it's more commonly spoken within the country. You guys seem to get English a lot better than
Well, English is the hardly anybody here speaks anything but English.
Oh, see?
Yeah. There's I mean, English has been the main language in Ireland as a whole for, I don't know. Oh, this is going way back into history. I don't know how long ago, but it's well over 100 years or more. There are a handful of like native Irish speakers. And then in Northern Ireland, there'd be some people who would speak what is called Ulster Scots, but it's basically just English spoken badly with sort of Scottish influences, because a lot of us, our ancestry would be Scottish settlers who came over from Britain to settle in the north. Whereas the native population would have grown up speaking Irish, and then they changed to English at one point. And we'll not go into that. It's a situation not entirely unlike North South Korea, just without the communism.
No, it's still fascinating.
Here's a question. This was kind of what I was wondering, because I mean, from my perspective, growing up, you know, in Northern Ireland, probably anywhere in the world, it's not the States. You import, as you're growing up, a lot of American pop culture. Sure. So you kind of have in your head an idea of what America is going to be like, or what it is like. So what, I guess, did it meet your expectations when you went there and you stepped off the plane? You know, what was your reaction over the, I don't know, the days as you kind of walked around and got see this place?
I will never forget the smell, Stephen. The smell, like, you know, because in Korea, it's very polluted.
Yeah.
You know, you guys seen pictures of, like, you know, Seoul.
Smog.
Like, you look at the sky, it's like, it's not even gray. It's like reddish, like, I don't even know what color it is. It's just gross. So I would have to say, first time I came to this country, and you just get off the plane and you smell the air, even though it was half of, like, airplane gasoline air, it still smelled better than Korea.
Yeah.
And I'd never seen so many trees.
What does the United States of America smell like? And don't say freedom.
Oh man, that was my line. it smells like a greenhouse. Like, that's the only thing I could compare. So in Korea, there's a lot of greenhouse, right? So they would try to grow a lot of crops during the winter, because there's always a shortage. So there are a lot of greenhouse. My friends had a greenhouse. So when I go into a greenhouse, you smell that oxygenated air from the plants.
Yeah.
That's what United States smells like. Now, if you ask me today, it smells much different. I mean, like, it is very different. Like, there's diesel trucks, which doesn't exist in Korea.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people, you know, riding diesel trucks. And, you know, there is pollution here too. I just didn't see it as a kid.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the massive land difference is probably one of the things you'll also notice right away, is just, why do they have so much land here? It's everyone's backyard seems excessive to me, you know?
Yeah.
Even the richest person in Korea, their backyard is like 2 square feet.
Well, that's easy to mow. You just bring out your scissors and cut.
That's the other thing. Like,
the grass.
Why are people growing weed on their you know, on their front yard, and they're paying money so they can cut it every 2 weeks? Like, it's like, it doesn't make any sense.
Oh, is that the perception, like, grass is a weed and people, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, so in Korea, we don't have any grass. Yeah. You know, if you have a front yard, you cement over that thing. There's no grass.
Yeah.
That's extra work. You know, why would you work that hard to cut grass? Also, Korea is a lot more culturally very efficient. They really pride themselves on efficiency, using land, you know, most efficiently. You know, in an apartment, just doesn't go up. You know, you have, oh, like, where do you live? Oh, I live in the level minus 16. Oh, really? So they have, like, you know, apartment just doesn't go up. They go down quite a bit too. So to see this much land, it was pretty shock.
Yeah. I think my only, I don't know, very little insight into South Korean culture, apart from a few of Bong Joon-ho's movies.
Who is this? So you probably know more about South Korea than I do at this point.
I've seen like 2 movies, like Parasite and what was the other one? The Host. Oh, and I've seen Train to Busan.
Yes.
Train to
Busan. They're making a sequel.
Yes, which is a zombie movie. So that's where I've got all my insights to Korean culture from. That and
so you've seen more Korean movies than I have recently. I've only seen The Train to Busan. I haven't seen Parasite yet.
Yeah. It's good. It's harrowing. I'll not spoil it. I'll tell you nothing about it.
No, I've been wanting to watch it since it won the Oscar. I just haven't had a chance.
Oh, here's a question.
Yeah.
If you were watching, because it's subtitled, it's obviously Korean, but it's subtitled. Are you listening to the Korean or are you reading the subtitles? Because you're in that middle phase.
Oh my goodness. So when I watched Train to Busan, I think I tried to read the subtitles because it's just there. But even English movies, I hate subtitles. I think it takes away, because I think as a filmmaker, we know the visual cues and intentional visual cue, and we appreciate that so much.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm missing out on so much if I'm looking down even for a split second. I try to look at movies and any kind of artwork in film as a whole visual piece without subtitle, because I believe in the director's intention to like have everything on the screen on purpose.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So you'd be a fan of Christopher Nolan movies then?
Oh, man. Yeah.
Away for 2 seconds and what just happened?
You miss everything. Yeah. Drives my wife nuts because she loves subtitles.
She watches, right?
And I always, I don't know. I guess she doesn't want to miss any words, but at the same time, to me, words are less important than visual cues.
Very good. I can't remember what we were talking about now. Yes, what America smelled like. It smells like a greenhouse. Is there anything you miss from Korea, from your childhood? Any like foods or smells?
I think that's probably, I would say 90% of Korean people who come here, their common answer probably is going to be like, oh, I miss the food. The restaurants here, and there's a couple of good ones, but it just can't make up for the authenticity of the Korean food on the street, like the street food, or even like your grandma's cooking, you know. It just can't get that at a restaurant. So I miss that kind of food the most.
What kind of foods would they be?
So there's a dish called doenjang. Doenjang is basically a aged moldy beans. So they're you know, they store the beans so long that there's mold on it, but it's, you know, somewhat fermented, and that's kind of like the Korean culture. Everything is just rotted, and they make a soup out of it.
Yep.
But you know, I think the temperature is probably like what makes that food so authentic to that region, because you have to like get this, you know, doenjang from that city, or else it doesn't taste as same. That's what they believe.
Because the atmosphere, I assume it's because there's a lot, you know, there's bacteria or whatever in it, and they will perform at different temperatures.
So I think that's one reason. I think the other reason is because, you know, I mean, like, you know, it's something that you eat, you know, when you go to grandma's, it has that memory to it. Yeah. So I haven't had that kind of doenjang in a long time. I try to make it myself from the Korean grocery store that I, you know, get it from. It's, you know, it's all processed a little bit. It's different. Yeah. Everything's processed here.
And in a can.
Yeah, in a can. And expiration date, you look at it and you're like, what? 2045, this can't be right.
would that not apply to kimchi though?
Oh yes, kimchi goes sour very fast. Yeah. So they have kimchi here too, but it's very expensive. Yeah. They overcharge everything that's Korean.
Yeah, I love kimchi. I discovered it a few years ago, and it's very, very expensive for like, getting on like half a kilo. It could be like £5. So that's
over there too.
That's like $7. And it tends to be imported a lot of the time from Korea. But the first time I bought it, nearly ended my marriage, because it was out of date when I bought it, so I got a little bit of discount, but it was like a couple of months out of date.
Oh my goodness!
So when I opened it, it was fizzy, so you had a really strong flavor, but there's so much gas in it. It was like actually fizzy, and I thought it was amazing, but I left it in the kitchen in an unopened tub, and because I've been in its presence for a for like an hour or so, I couldn't smell it anymore. Louise got home and I was out, and she was so furious with the smell that I came home to find the tub of it lying in the lawn out the backyard. And I was banned from ever bringing it into the house again.
Oh my goodness. I'm so sorry. I had a terrible first experience.
I had a good experience. Louise had a bad experience.
No, it's horrible. It's a very pungent smell.
Yes. A lot of garlic.
And And I don't know. I think that's how most Korean people's house probably smell like. They don't know it.
Mm.
But yeah, my wife, she's half Filipino, half Caucasian, English rather. Mm-hmm. It took her a while to get used to that. Once you are Korean and you're born in Korea, you cannot just forget kimchi. Like, it's something that you have to have in your life. So it was very, very, like, I made it very clear, like, I have to eat this rest of my life. Yeah. Are you okay with that?
Explain, we haven't actually defined what it is. Explain what kimchi is.
It's basically pickle radish, right?
So it's not cabbage?
It is. Okay. So it is, and there's a radish version too.
Okay.
So essentially it is that, but problem is, to make it more flavorful, they put, kind of like aged seafood in a way. So like aged salted shrimp, for example, mm-hmm. or like fish guts. You should probably read the ingredients when you buy a kimchi.
No, it's okay.
So some of them will say fish guts, salted fish guts.
Okay.
And when you put that all in one formula there, it does stink.
Yeah.
That's why it stinks so much, I think, is that seafood a lot of times that you put in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, seafood by itself stinks. Like, you try to age that with cabbage.
So how is kimchi actually traditionally used? Because the way I've eaten it is I basically take some out of the jar, put it in a bowl, and just sit and eat it with a small fork.
So that's a heresy. You have to use chopsticks.
Okay, I'm terrible. Sure, terrible with chopsticks.
No, it's funny you asked that because my father-in-law, when he first had kimchi at a restaurant,
yeah.
he ate it like a salad. He thought it was like pre-meal salad. He ate the whole thing, which is a no-no.
That's, yeah, right? That's going to come back.
Yeah. So you're supposed to have a little bit, just a little bit.
And
you know, a whole jar of kimchi should last you a whole, like, half a month. You should not sit there and eat that whole thing in one sitting. So it's really a side dish, and Korean people really pride on, like, having multiple side dishes, mm-hmm. right? So you don't ever have, like, you know, it's so weird in this country, you go to a restaurant and, like, you have usually three things. You have your meat,
yeah.
the veggie, and the starch. That's
yeah.
it. Whereas if you go to a Korean restaurant, it's like, I feel bad for the person washing the dishes because they lay down, like, 50 different kinds of side dishes.
Right? I love a good platter, good spread of various
right.
things.
And you're supposed to eat a little bit here and there. Your bite each time mm-hmm. should be very different. And that's kind of like, the culture in Korea is you sit down and you eat all these side dishes, but at the same time, now that I think of it, it's kind of gross because everybody dips their own chopstick into the side dishes.
Not good in a pandemic then.
No. perception of things.
Is every meal like that? There's lots of dishes, or do you ever sit down and just have a bowl of one thing?
It's very shared. Like, even the soup,
yeah.
right? You don't get your own soup.
Okay.
Like, that's rude.
Yeah.
Like, you're supposed to have a communal soup in the middle, and everybody puts their spoon in there.
Ooh,
And it's considered okay at the time.
Yeah.
After 2020, there's going to be some changes. I don't know, Stephen. Like, I can't look at things the same anymore, you know? I just can't. Even watching movies, you know, everybody's like...
Yeah, why are they so close together?
Yeah, I was like, "What? What is happening?"
Those people are not social distancing. I feel like we've talked about fermented cabbage for quite a while.
We did.
We'll jump ahead to what you're doing now, I think. So right now, your work. What are you doing?
So 20 years later. So I'm in a very unique situation where I know people on YouTube hate calling themselves YouTuber.
Yeah.
But essentially that is what I am in a way, because if you look at my day-to-day life, that's what I do most,
yeah.
right? I actually fired all my clients beginning of the year.
Whoa.
Before the pandemic. I didn't even know the pandemic was going to happen. So I told my clients, hey, I'm going to focus on my passion, which is
yep.
YouTube. I cannot, if you have work for me, I can't do it anymore. Because I just wanted to tell them that so that they don't ask me and then I have to say no.
Yeah.
So I sent that email out to most of my clients, and I was about to do YouTube, and then pandemic happened and my kids stayed home and there was no time. But yeah, so I make most of my income right now on YouTube, which is kind of insane because I don't have a huge subscriber base. Like, you know, I think I'm at like maybe 7,200 some subscribers. But there's been some of a culture shift on YouTube where brands like working with small YouTubers too. And you know that, Steven. So I've been fortunate enough to work with a couple brands. And affiliate links are a great way to make money if you diversify that. So I had a goal I told myself a while ago, if I ever make $2,000 in 1 month, I would keep pursuing YouTube.
Okay.
And I hit $2,000 at the end of June, which is the middle of the pandemic. And I basically said, all right, I'm going to keep, you know, putting all my time into YouTube. Because I have another phrase, like, I should trademark this. So once you go YouTube, you don't want to work for another dude. you really don't. Just think, no one's telling you what to
do. I'll be honest, that's it's pretty terrible.
Hey, it kind of rhymes, okay? It's all about the rhyming. If you have, you know, Asian parents, you say, hey, I'm doing YouTube. Doesn't look great. So you have to go through all that. Yeah, but at the end of the day, Steven, it took me a long time to find like a happiness doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Right. And I've been in IT, you know, I've made money before.
What were you doing? Because I know you did weddings. You ended up doing weddings. How did you get into, let's go back to how you got into doing video.
So I started video in a very strange sense. So I was in IT before. So I did IT for 9 years.
Did you do that coming out of education? You went into IT?
Yeah, because, you know, that's what successful people do. I'm just kidding. In my head, that was success to me at the time.
Yeah.
So I got into IT as soon as I got my green card. So I was somewhat successful, people say, but I wasn't happy.
Yeah.
So even as doing IT work at this corporation, whenever there's like this gap of someone saying, hey, we need a video, I don't know what to do. I'd be like, I'll make one for you for free, basically. And I would stay after work to work on these videos so it doesn't seem like I'm not doing my job.
And where did that passion come from for video? Was that something you're always interested in?
I don't know, because I start making videos not out of camera first. I start making videos out of, back in the day, if you guys remember, QuickTime had movie trailers that you can actually download.
Yes, right? I remember that.
Yeah, and it was the coolest thing. It is a long time ago.
Do you remember that?
And I would cut these movie clips into certain music that I had in mind, and I would edit these videos. Now that I look at it, it's horrible. But I love those edits.
Yeah.
Like, I just like doing that. And that kind of led me to like interest in like, what's gonna happen when I actually film my own thing? So I got a 1080p, it was the latest and the greatest, camcorder, long time ago. I don't remember the year, maybe 2000, like mid 2000, right?
Yeah.
And I start kind of editing that, but it was never like anything big. I do have a small music video on YouTube that I made, horrible. I don't even know the channel name. Like, it's out there. I can't even get it back. That was probably like the first YouTube video. But I never took YouTube seriously until recently. But it's always been somewhat of out of someone needs a video. And I was kind of like the person who said, hey, okay, I'll do it. I'll do one for you. But I never took it seriously until like most recently after I quit my IT job to say, hey, I'm going to do this. Because at the time I was doing weddings, that was like my first income.
Yeah. Which is where lot of people doing videos start.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great experience. You get to do everything, right? So audio, visual, like, you know, run and gun, you name it. You know, client saying change this, change that. you wanna face everything about video making? You do a wedding, you'll find out pretty quick. But obviously, I don't do that as a main thing anymore.
Yeah.
I do a second shoot for another guy who's doing it for. He's also doing YouTube, Envu Films.
Yep.
So I'm a second shooter for him. Works out really great. But yeah, I purposely don't take in any clients, even though I have tons of requests. I only focus on YouTube just because I think YouTube is one of those things. It's not a guaranteed success, but it's a guaranteed sustainable job if you put in the time. It might take you 1 year. It might take you 20 years.
Yeah, you feed in the effort. Income will come out the other side.
Well, so if you put in the hard work.
If you're making the right content, I suppose.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, that's the thing. Like, there is content for everybody. Yeah. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, there is an audience for something somewhere on YouTube. Yeah. So, you know, video making is pretty common these days. Yeah. So that's good and bad. But at the same time, like, you put in the hard work, you just be you. And yeah, things, good things start happening.
So are you, what do you get from the work? Because obviously you're doing, like, all of your review videos, there's always like an extra layer of creativity that goes into them. You're not just following, it's like, you're, it feels like you're not following the template every time, you're doing something different. Are you enjoying reviewing the products, or are you enjoying the process of making the video to review the products more?
Oof, that's a good question, Steven. Because I think that's something that we all ponder. Yep. Every single day we make these videos. Am I doing this for the product, or am I doing this for my enjoyment? What is the process? So at the end of the day, what I'm trying to do is make sure I protect what I have most valuable, which is my passion for video. So anything mm-hmm. that infringe on that, I stop yep. immediately. So which will result in creative video, because you know, you get bored. Like, if you do the yes. same thing over yeah. and over again, you're gonna get bored.
Yeah, I've done that with clients. Let them go if they're drowning you.
I mean, nothing wrong with, you know, client work too, but you know, client work, you have a little bit of box. I know they tell you there's yeah. no box, but you know, there are certain things I do on YouTube. Yeah. If I did that for a client, they'd be like, yeah.
You want full freedom? That's what you get. You want?
Yeah. And I think that's why I like certain brands and I like working with them mm-hmm. the most, is because the number one thing I tell them up front is, hey, I'm going to make some weird videos.
Yeah, look at lightsabers, spaceships.
Yeah, I mean, I think they also know when they work with you, if they've done their homework and you look at Stephen J. Reed's channel, you know you're not getting a normal video. So be careful, because you know, if the product's small, he might stick it up his nose. Who
yeah.
knows?
I haven't put the effort in a while in my intros. I feel like I've been getting quite lazy.
Yeah, so it's hard, because life still happens yeah. and you still have to, you know, do certain things. Like for me, it's not client work right now. It's, you know, yeah. watching my kids and, yeah. you know, making sure the house is still intact. Stuff like that.
Long term, is that what you want to keep doing? Review videos? Or are you seeing this as a step to a different type of content you want to make? Or are you just trying to see how it goes for now?
I think I fall in the same trap as a lot of creators in the beginning. So to make the channel sustainable yeah. in the beginning, you kind of have to review things. Yeah. Otherwise, yeah. one, you're not getting the views, because you're not staying in that loop of new products.
Yeah.
And two, it's really, you can't stop it once it starts, right? So you get these products and then you do a good job because you want to. And then next thing you know, you have 5 products on your yeah. door saying, I have to review all these 5 products. And you do those, you have 10 products. It's
yeah.
So I think we have to be careful not to go so much down that road if the channel is meant to be something else. Mm-hmm. So my channel, I want it to be 3 things, right? So I want it to be doing reviews, yep. tutorials, and vlogs. Right now, you can look at the channel and be like, say it looks like it's a review channel.
Yeah, that's this almost exactly the same 3 focuses I have, but somehow the reviews are always the ones that take over.
Yeah, because there's a deadline. Oh, because your vlog doesn't have a deadline. Yeah. Your tutorial doesn't have a deadline. Reviews, even though the company never say, hey, it needs to be done by this date,
yeah.
but you know in your head, if you're too late, that product is gone. Like yeah. it's the next yeah. one. You know, you're not gonna get the views, and the views do generate somewhat of a revenue for you. So it's a dangerous trap. I think we have to be mindful and just kind of always go back why you started the YouTube channel from the start anyway. Yeah. So I have to remember that. And I actually had to decline a bunch of products, even though, yep. you know, I can get greedy and be like, ooh, I want that. You know, it's shiny. But at the same time, I tell myself, hey, I'm gonna get stressed, one, you know, because I'm gonna have so many products to review. But at the same time, like, why did I start YouTube channel from the beginning? It's not to only do reviews.
Yeah.
So I would say, yeah, I don't want to fall into that trap. I don't know, check back in 1 year, Steven, and say you didn't, you fell into the trap.
Well, if my prediction works out, there won't be any gimbals in 3 years or 2-3 years. So you'll have to do something else.
Oh, man. So yeah, I did fall into that niche a little bit, but I think my niche can be stable footage is my niche. It doesn't always have to be gimbals.
Stable, yeah. stable footage. Yeah, so you would you want to have that like every three videos, one's a review, one's a tutorial, one's a vlog, or that would that be your
Ooh,
idea?
That'd be tough right now. Yeah. I'm gonna say every five videos, yeah. It's a vlog.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've fallen into. It seems to go that way.
Yeah, and it's good. It's a good indication that channel has potential, yeah. And it's healthy. Because brands looking for you and they're recognizing that, hey, you have a really good, healthy channel. So I take it as a compliment, but you know, we just got to be careful because we don't want to hate doing this either.
No. So here's the question. You hit, I don't know, 100,000 subscribers, and you've managed to sort of get them to come along on all three types of your content. And now, no matter what you post, it gets enough views for you to make whatever you need to make from it. What do you post?
Wow. So basically you're saying, if I'm Peter McKinnon, what would I make?
yeah. Lots.
Isn't that what everybody's thinking? No, he's beyond 100,000, of course.
Yeah.
I think it's still gonna be about somewhat same. Mm-hmm. I think there'll be less product review in a sense.
Yeah.
Because I think I wanna have like maybe one or two brand that I work with.
Yeah.
That I believe in, I enjoy using, but keep that to minimum. Do because at the end of the day, I think it's all about what kind of legacy do you want to leave?
Yeah.
Do you want to be the person who review a bunch of products that doesn't exist in 100 years? Or do you want to be the person who helped out a bunch of people? And that's kind of like the core of my channel is,
yeah.
And people who DM me, they know this. Like, I want to help people, like, pursue what they dream, which, you know, if it's video, even better.
Yeah.
So help them out in the beginning because it's so easy to lose interest in video.
Yes.
Because it's hard. And I think I not that I, you know, wish I had this person when I was, you know, kind of learning video, but I want to be that person who helps out people, which means that that's going to end up with less review video, more vlog if it's inspirational,
yeah.
And more artistic work. Because some people are visual and don't like reading subtitles.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can be inspired by that. And that's probably the content I want to make. YouTube is huge.
Yeah.
It'll reach every single corner of the earth almost. Yeah.
How do you find the balance? Jumping away.
Oh.
How do you, have you found a balance? What's your, you know, mind like on a day-to-day basis? How do you, yeah.
to be honest, I think, being creative and being on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
That is something very hard to get hold of. It's no longer about like I have everything balanced and under control. It's more like if there's an idea,
yeah.
I don't stop it. And it's sometimes it probably drives, you know, people around me a little bit nuts because like I when it comes to like, oh, I have this idea, I want to make a video about mm-hmm. it. At that moment, I drop everything.
Mm.
Like I was cleaning the kitchen, you know. I just drop, I don't,
yeah.
I stop that. So I think I have to be careful because when it comes to like being responsible as a parent,
yeah.
And you know, obviously being a father, and I don't ignore my kids when it comes to creativity.
Yeah.
So having a very clear line, what is most important in life,
yeah.
Kids are up there, family's up there, and make sure it doesn't infringe on that.
Yeah.
I think everything else, if you can find balance in that zone, I think it's good.
Yeah.
I think problem a lot of times is it's tough, right? Because video takes so long to make, you have to gain time in some aspects. So yes, you're spending probably a little bit less time with your kids than you would like. So I think you have to look at it as a big picture.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably putting in a little bit more time now.
Yeah.
So this is an investment future, like, because I want to retire. I'll probably never retire. I'm basically retired right now, but you would think that when you get to 100,000 subscribers,
yeah.
You don't have to put in this much work because possibly you have an editor, you have
yeah.
someone helping you. So I want to scale up and spend less time in doing
yeah.
things on YouTube on my own. So yeah, in 2030, I'll be hiring, just letting you guys know.
yeah. Balance is there to be found eventually, maybe.
Yeah.
Do you have?
But it's a tough.
Do
time,
you put
yeah.
like cutoffs? I'm not going to work before or after certain times of the day, or does it just you just try to keep a quantity of time free?
Well, since I am gonna pull my kids out of daycare starting now, that's gonna have to happen. Yeah. So before I had a pretty good chunk of time. My kids will go to daycare for twice a week.
Yeah.
It's a small daycare. So I had YouTube time dedicated. I didn't really have to like distinguish, oh, this is cutoff time. Because when they come home, I cut it off. But now that they're home 24/7, I don't know, I'm gonna try this. You might see me on Instagram announcing to people that I'm gonna have to wake up at 4 a.m. Oh. every single day when no one's awake. And that's gonna be my YouTube time. It's gonna be the only way.
That is commitment. Are you a morning person? I feel like
no, I am not. So I was so glad when you said 10 a.m. to do this call. I was like, oh, thank goodness. but when it comes to pursuing my passion and comparing, I don't think it's gonna be a problem. Mm-hmm. It's just gonna be painful. Like, but in order to develop a habit, it's like 60 to 90 days. The first 60 to 90 days, it's going to be painful. But
yeah. Are you going to be getting after that should be fine. Less sleep, or are you just going to be going to bed earlier?
So I learned very fast during this pandemic that if I don't sleep, like my mind is not very positive. So I used to like stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning doing YouTube videos.
I've noticed some of your late edits being posted and
which was great in the sense that I got a lot done, but my mental health started to go down, especially during pandemic. I noticed I'm very sensitive to a lot of emotional things. So if you only got 2 hours of sleep for 3-4 days straight, you're not stable, man. So to be a healthier person, I decided to at least get like 5-6 hours of sleep. So I'm gonna have to go to sleep early to answer that question.
report back on that one. Is there anything else you do to kind of, I don't know, get a little bit of headspace? Do you ever go out on your own? Do you walk? What do you do to get that head time?
It used to be fishing in a kayak. And it's been over 2 years since I did that. So I own a kayak. I own a bunch of fishing gear, but I have not touched them. I tried to fish during a little family trip to a beach, but I had a fire going and I had a three-year-old who's never seen fire like that before. I was trying to hold him down so much that I couldn't fish. So and when you're a parent, I think you kind of reduce your own time quite a bit. So I think my only outlet now is really just making videos on YouTube. That's when it comes down to it.
So it's more important than ever that you enjoy that process.
I think that's why it's hard, because it's so hard to do that when video is something that is so many components to it. It's not like you make video for 30 minutes like, oh, I'm done, feels great. You know, you work on one video for a week, and because there's so many components to it, some parts you don't like, some parts you love. But as a whole, you have to remember to enjoy it. Otherwise, you're going to lose interest very fast.
Yeah. We've been talking for an hour and 10 minutes.
Man, did we break a record? Did I break the record on Stephen J. Reed's podcast?
I'm not sure. Maybe.
I might be the longest podcast. Maybe. It depends on how you cut it, I guess.
I'm not cutting.
Let's just cut it in half.
I'm scanning through my list of notes. Oh, I never asked you if you're wearing socks.
If I'm wearing socks right now? Oh yeah, I'm wearing socks. What color are they? It's cold. It's getting pretty cold. Oh man, I am like the so bad. This is white socks.
White socks.
So I love white socks. Even if I'm wearing all black, I wear white socks. Such a dad thing to do, but.
Let's go back maybe just a little bit. I was gonna say we're gonna go back to North Korea. It's not what anyone wants to hear. I suppose the question I'm asking, do you see it through South Korean eyes, or are you seeing it, the country as an American now? Like, what's your perception, and what do you think, having grown up in South Korea, of the perception of, people in America, people in the West, of North Korea? It's a very complicated question.
That's a very, very deep question, but it's good, Stephen. So here's the thing. So, and only if you lived it, you can kind of understand it. But if I were to describe it best as possible, when we look at North Korea as a South Koreans, we don't just look at them as an entity.
Yeah.
That's your family,
right?
So we have this huge division where, the Korean War didn't happen that long ago. So people still have immediate families in North Korea.
It was the 50s, is that right?
Yeah. So I know a bunch of friends who can't see their family. They don't even know what happened to them, in a sense. So when they talk about bombing or any kind of fight, mm-hmm. they get different kind of emotion.
Yeah.
So yes, in a sense that we have this division, 36 parallel is the line that distinguished North Korea versus South Korea. But I think in our culture as living in South Korea, we kind of look them as not as pure enemy, mm-hmm. but just somewhere where they have a different leader,
yeah.
and it's still part of your family in a sense. You miss them. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of emotion behind that. We always want to kind of unify the two countries, but worry that we're completely going two different directions. Yeah. It'd be very hard to unite like Germany did.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there isn't huge hope that we're going to unite, but we're always like having a little bit of hope that next leader in North Korea is hopefully somewhat sane to allow us to at least see each other. And what's yeah. funny is that as a United States citizen, you can go to North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
So what people are doing is you go basically migrate to the United States, become U.S. citizen as a Korean,
yeah.
and you can go to North Korea. And that's like the craziest thing.
As a tourist?
And my aunt did that. Now,
but you can't
go
south.
Into... Oh, no, no. Yeah. That's a huge no-no.
Yeah.
So now they do kind of like look at you and make sure you don't go in certain places, right? So as a Korean, even as a United States citizen, you go there, they're not going to let you in anywhere except like those designated places.
Yeah.
But I think it's so different looking at North Korea and looking at news and media. It's covered so differently than how our emotional response perceives it.
So you see them, would it be accurate to say you see them as lost family members?
Right. So I don't know anyone there personally, but I had enough friends who have people there and how they cry about it, and they get pretty emotional whenever there's potential fight going on. So I've seen that enough to a point where I do feel like I have family there.
Mm-hmm.
And Korean people pride themselves quite a bit on their elders and like heritage, right? Where you come from. That's a big part of the culture. So I feel like I share a lot of common culture with North Korea, even though we're completely two different direction now because of the leader.
Yeah. What do you think the future's like? Do you think at some point it's just going to be inevitable that the country will be reunified, or do you think the current situation is going to be maintained for a long time?
I think history has proven that once you kind of go into economics of producing products and trading with other countries mm-hmm. in the world, you have to kind of be part of them.
Yeah.
And you can't stay isolated forever in history, I think.
Yeah.
So I do see a hope in future like that.
Yeah.
I definitely don't see that happening with this current leader there. And I don't know, that family runs deep.
Yeah.
every time
a lot of Kims.
They have the next person come up, they're just as crazy. So I don't foresee it happening anytime soon. But then again, like I'm not a Korean historian who can predict such thing either.
Yeah.
So I'm not claiming to be that person.
Yeah.
But I think it's nice to hope that one day we will, somewhat have that border open in a sense. They can be strict.
Yeah.
And then eventually, because even as a natural resource perspective, North Korea is heavily dependent on iron mm-hmm. and anything that comes out of the mountains. So they have the mountains. South Korea has the flat fields with rice.
Yeah.
So we got the rice. They got the iron. Sometime in point, they're going to run out of iron to trade.
Yeah.
They'll need some kind of economic sustainability other than that. So they're going to have to come out of their shell eventually to trade with other countries more.
Yeah.
In which case, hopefully things get better.
Yeah. What way do you think that will happen? Because you talk to some people sometimes and their immediate reaction is, why doesn't America invade North Korea, and sort everything out?
That's huge.
Yeah. What's your reaction to that kind of idea?
I don't think... See, I think the problem also is the if you look at the landscape of North Korea mm-hmm. and South Korea, I think that'll be very tough. I mean, I'm sure, from a military perspective, like, I'm sure people are saying, like, why are we letting this tiny little country just kind of, like, stay doing what they're doing? Like, they can be crushed at any time from military perspective. But I think because they're so close to like South Korea, the implication of that kind of war or invasion, I think probably is not great.
And everybody's in the army or has been in the army. Which is crazy.
And what kind of president would want to set that kind of precedence, even our current president, to invade and just overpower a world that's not ours? So I think that's a huge implication, whoever decides to do that. There's so much to it than just military and, you know, strategy. And I mean, the reason why we have military base in Korea is just to keep an eye on them, sure. But yeah, it's a very complicated situation where I think they are in their world right now doing their thing, unless they are advancing in nuclear technology and threatening, you know, long-range missiles. And and once they start doing a lot of that, I think they'll be on the focus again. But I think they kind of come in and out of focus quite a bit. So they'll, you know, do some, you know, military tests, and we're like, oh, we talk about North Korea a lot all of a sudden.
We're still here.
And then and then we kind of forget about them. And then they'll probably surface again. And they kind of like that attention too. I knew they liked the attention as soon as they had Dennis Rodman come over. I was like, oh yeah, they like that attention. All I know is that if we can keep them peaceful, we should do everything we can to keep them peaceful. If they want to invite Dennis Rodman again, just let them.
Okay, right. We're in an hour and a half. We should probably. Woo-hoo! Yeah, I could talk to you about North Korea a lot, but I think that's an entirely other topic for a very different time. Maybe something. Yeah, this is what I want. I'm going to cut this waffling out because I'm just going around in circles here. And it's because I meant to ask you this earlier. What surprised you the most about American culture compared to what you grew up with? Was it like one thing, or maybe just the culture in the West in general? Was there like one thing that's like, that's so different, or that way of thinking is so completely at odds with?
All right, so I have to be completely honest here. So it's very easy to answer because this is very true in my mind right now. Why is the stakes so big here?
The stakes?
the beef steak here, I'd never seen anything like that. I went to a grocery store and I could not believe how big the steaks are. So in Korea, there aren't that many cows, right? So when we get steak from a restaurant, it's size of your pinky. And then here in the United States, they have porterhouse. So that absolutely shocked me. So easy answer, big steaks.
Okay, that was
so much value in
that was the deep and meaningful statement I was looking for.
There you go.
I think we will finish there. Say absolute pleasure talking to you. And if anyone has got this length in this podcast, thank you for listening. And I'm gonna stop recording now.